The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
We had a huge, monumental weekend this last weekend.
Was it monumental? Sure.
Sure, let's go with that. Monumental.
It was big.
Yeah, I guess it was monumental in that it was our seventh annual Apologetics Canada Conference.
Seven is a good number.
That's a good number,
That is a good number. I think once we get to 10, that will be officially monumental.
All right, well, we'll save that.
Help us get to 10, yeah.
That's right.
It was a great conference.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, it was just crazy in-house, right? So many people milling about. I think we had, about 1,200, 1,300 people?
Yeah, there was around 1,250, something like that. And I tell you, one of the things that I love about the conference is that it is just electric. When you head into the audience, when you head into the hallways, it is just alive. It is a buzz of conversation and just excitement.
It was a hot ticket in town, I tell you.
But I think part of the reason why it is so electric is that you've got, over 1,000 like-minded people in one room. I mean, everyone wants to be there and they're there to discuss topics. I mean, you just can't help but have these amazing conversations wherever you go. It's amazing.
Yeah. And we got lots of positive feedback. In fact, I don't think I've heard one negative comment yet. Maybe except for the fact that some of the breakout sessions got full too quickly.
Well, that happens.
That happens every year.
Yeah.
Lots of positive feedback. In fact, I was just talking to Laura Weens, who's a staff member here at Northview Community Church, where we work. And she had a Bible study or a prayer meeting last night, and one of the ladies there was talking about how she had brought her young adult children to this thing, and she apparently went on and on about how practical it was. And I think that's one piece of feedback that we seem to be getting consistently, is that this year's topics were super down to earth.
Accessible and practical.
Yeah, because we had, we had Christopher Yuan speaking on a Christian response to homosexuality, and then the Rethink Dehumanization talk.
By the way, Christopher Yuan did an incredible job. Not only was he gracious and winsome, added to the fact that his testimony gave him authority to speak on the subject, but he was uncompromising in his biblical truth as he addressed that subject. I was really impressed by Christopher.
Yeah. So this was my first year behind the scenes. Mm. My wife and I have attended, this conference for the last 6 years. And you talk about the buzz. That's what I felt, those past 6 years. This was a little different. Yeah. being behind the scenes and running down the hallways and, that kind of stuff. But
in fact, my phone keeps track of how many steps I take or whatever.
Yeah.
And so on average, I'll take, I have a desk job, right? So on average per day, I'll get maybe 2,000 steps or whatever. On Saturday, it was 12,000 steps. Some of it was running, right, from one end of the church to the other.
There was a number of comments about you in running position. You had your arms going. That was great.
There are a lot of spinning plates to make a conference like this happen. Because those that are sitting in the audience, as you're well aware of, Terry, you're oblivious to what's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You're oblivious to the near catastrophes that take place.
Yeah.
And everything just seems to run along smoothly and great. And it's because there's 70 volunteers that are making that happen.
Yeah. A big shout out to all of our volunteers who helped make this happen, because every year, without the volunteers, we're hooped.
And one of the things that I am so impressed with, every year we have more people ask to volunteer than we can use. Mm-hmm. And I think, how cool is that? So we are so thankful for people that follow us, love what we're doing, and that are willing to give of their time and talents to make this happen. So, yeah, thank you to all of you volunteers. Thank you to the speakers as well that were there. It was, again, I have heard and we have received so many emails of people that have been blessed by that conference and conversations that have been started. We had a number of people that brought friends relatives that were either skeptical of Christianity, searching. I mean, every worldview imaginable was present at the conference. And the other thing too that I heard was a lot of people that, you know, had gone home and have since had really meaningful conversations with family members and friends. Incredible. You know, I just feel honored to be a part of it all.
Yeah, I mean, we impacted, you know, 1,000, 1,200 people's lives with information. I mean, I remember sitting there last 6 years, my brain is just full, you know.
Yeah.
Come Saturday afternoon, you are full to the limits. But, you know, it's fantastic. I mean, you take that knowledge out into your community and with people around you, and you're affecting more lives.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some of the things we did different this year that was good, and let's share maybe some of the near disasters.
Yeah. definitely one of the highlights was the photo booth this year, because I think, Andy, you got that idea from another conference, and we implemented it this year. So we basically had a little section in what we call the cove. We set up some lights and we set up some little props that people can use, right?
Like personally, I loved the props. So we had thought bubbles.
Yeah.
They were all ironic. I hope people got it, such as a thought bubble that says, therefore I am. So again, you know, going off of Descartes, I think, therefore I am.
So, and since it's a thought bubble, you're obviously thinking, and therefore you are.
Yeah, which nerds like us are like, oh, I love that. You know? another one.
I wonder how many people went, huh?
I know. We had some symbolic logic there as well, such as Leibniz's indiscernibility of identicals. And so, right. Again, there was irony there because it's a thought bubble. And so there's this indiscernibility of identicals between your thoughts and who you are. Mm. And are they the same thing? Or is the mind distinct from the brain? So again, the irony there was pleasing to me.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else did we do differently this year?
We had a hashtag contest.
Right.
That first we started online and we, you know, introduced people to it. So we had a fair number that participated. I have a feeling once they saw what was won with an iPad Air and a backpack, a Herschel backpack full of apologetics goodies, I'm sure that next year we're going to up our game next year on what we're going to give away. But I'm sure we'll have more people participate. But then what we did is a contest during the conference in which we gave away another backpack full of goodies, and they needed to hashtag at the photo booth, and that worked really well.
Right. Did you guys get pictures done there? You know, I said I would go back, and I never did.
Well, I saw that Steve did.
Yeah, I mean, I had forgotten about it because, I mean, I walk by, I see it, right?
Yeah.
But it never really occurred to me that I should go and do it until it was like 3 p.m. I'm like, the conference is about to end in like an hour. I'm like, I should probably get in there and get this thing done. Right? And
well, technically I did because if you were
with your video.
Yeah, if you're at the conference, we did something pretty fun this year. We started it off with a video of me starting at the book table and working my way to the green room in which Frank Turek is sleeping, holding my book, wakes up to telling me that it's a real page turner.
And I'm on page 3.
Yeah. And people were just howling. But I jumped into the photo booth quickly. And if you're wondering,
but Steve had to give him a karate chop to wake up as well, right?
Yeah, I live the Asian stereotype for Apologetics Canada.
Listen, every apologetics ministry needs a ninja. So if you're wondering what those pictures are, just take a look at hashtag ACConf17 and you can see all those pics. There are a ton of them and they're fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks to all that participated. They're great.
Mm-hmm. One piece of feedback that I've been getting again consistently is not only the content of it, but the professionalism of it all. I think what contributed to it was the fact that everything was really kind of, in terms of visuals, there was a theme, very definite, noticeable theme with the white background and the colorful ink and all that kind of stuff. And the photo booth was the same way. We had the backdrop, right? And all that kind of stuff.
And this year we had an app.
Yes.
We
did.
We took it up a notch.
We did.
And we got to give a big shout out, don't we?
Oh, for sure. Josh Reeves. We got to give a big, big shout out to him, man.
Yeah, thank you, Josh, man.
Oh, how did he came to us and said he'd like to do this for us.
this year. He just randomly came up to us, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe offering
this is
a service.
This is what he does for a living. And it's like, hey, guys, I want to make you guys an app for the I go to the conference. I love the conference. And I want an app at the conference.
Yeah.
I'll build this thing.
He was at the conference. I didn't even know.
Yeah,
I didn't see him.
Yep.
Did you meet or get run into him?
No. I don't, you know, truthfully, the whole conference is a blur. I see very few people. Nancy be like, yeah, so-and-so was there. I'm like, they were?
Okay.
I didn't see, well, I didn't see anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing that stinks about being in the back.
Yeah.
The conference or the app itself was just simple, easy to use. It was fantastic. Like,
and everything was on there.
Yeah.
Plus some.
For all your app needs, go to look up Josh Reeves. You know?
Yeah, I think we'd like some feedback on that too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, give us some feedback on the app and what you thought about it.
We're hoping to do it again and make it even better.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, if you did miss the conference and you're like, man, you know, this stinks that I wasn't there, you can purchase the digital download that's going to have everything. It's going to have all the sessions, speakers, notes, PowerPoint presentations that we can add in there. We're going to jam pack that thing full of everything. So if that interests you, you can either use the app or go online to the conference and you can purchase the digital download. It should be available
at the latest April 1st.
Yeah.
But because we're not producing physical DVDs anymore, it might actually happen even more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But typically it's been April 1st. That's been the mark.
Great. Looking forward to that.
All right. So do you have something from the bowels of the internet?
Yeah, what's cooking online? I know, I'm thinking maybe we should come up with a different word than that.
I think so too.
Yeah. The dark corners of the internet.
Way, way down there, yeah. This one says, sex dolls, brothel opens in Spain, and many predict sex robots tourism are soon to follow. Barcelona has just become the home of Europe's first sex doll agency. So they're introducing these into the brothels there. And it's going to become a standard in the next few years.
I heard about that. Like they're like life-sized, lifelike dolls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. They, I mean, you'll be able to put personalities into them. I mean, they're going to feel real. They're going to have, you know, you can ask for any type of doll is basically what it was,
right.
It was saying, right?
Yeah, I remember there is a company called Real Doll, I think, that's working to implement AI into it even, so that later down the road you will have sex dolls that can respond to you in some way, and you can set up their personalities however you want it or whatever.
This reminds me of your session, Steve, which was titled Science Fiction Is Now.
Science Fiction Is Now.
I mean, isn't that the case? More and more you're seeing things that you saw in the movies, you know, things that you maybe read about and you're like, oh, that'll never happen. Oh, yeah, it's happening.
Yeah, and one of the things that one of the phrases, I guess, that I picked up from one of the books that I was reading was, the question has moved on from, is this possible, to, should we do it?
Yeah.
Right. And that's very much the sense that I'm getting, especially with, and some people are even talking in all of this about whether this constitutes rape.
Well, I think that's the thing. Everybody thinks, oh, you know, brothels and, you know, having, you know, human people there, you know, that's bad. But sex dolls, well, that's not bad. That's mm-hmm. good. If anything, I think some people think this is a step in the right direction.
In fact, I remember, I forget if it was this article or in another article, this sort of thing is actually not new, because these sorts of sex doll brothels, if you will, you have those in Japan already. And in Japan, in one of the articles I remember reading, it was saying that men go there or women go there precisely so that they can get around the problem of infidelity.
Mm-hmm,
because they don't see this as, unless you do it with another human person, it doesn't count. Right? I mean, it just sounds like technicality to me, because your mind and your soul is already oriented away from, you know, your soulmate, so to speak, you know, your better half.
What I find interesting about this, and this would be something worth talking even more about on maybe a future podcast, is how this not only dehumanizes the female that this is objectifying, but it dehumanizes the person participating in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thought that I just had right now is how you have the dehumanizing of an entire culture as relationships are degraded and devalued.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing that stuck out to me as I was looking into this stuff is that there are a couple ways, different ways of dehumanizing. One is to, just like you said at the presentation at the conference, right? We use words like, you know, we call police officers pigs, for example, or
criminals dogs.
Yeah, criminals dogs, or, you know, the Nazis called the Jews rats and things like that. But another way of dehumanizing another person is by humanizing something that isn't human.
That's right.
And I think in this case, it fits perfectly. You have a sex doll. It's not really a human person, but you make it, in a sense, like a human substitute, right? And you humanize it in some way. And therefore, in engaging in this, what is a very human activity, you know, human sexual activity.
It reminds me of the movie, I believe it's called The Stepford Wives. And it's interesting because that was an old movie that was then remade. But this is something that people have thought about for a long time, and now we're seeing people actually moving forward in actualizing it.
Mm-hmm. It's the new normal, it says, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's saying sex with humans is going to be passed.
Right.
That is wild to think about.
Well, I know, and I think that that's why the church, and we've done this before, and we're going to continue to do this as an organization. We host discussions on these things at churches, because I am convinced that as a culture, we have got to talk about these things. Like, I mean, I told you guys the other day when I was talking with an engineer from Google, and she was asking, you know, she just gets so much into coding. She doesn't even necessarily know what she's coding, let alone thinking about the implications of what she's doing, mm-hmm. right? She's just been given a specific project that's part of a much larger project. Mm-hmm. And so she does what she's supposed to do.
Is that kind of similar to what you talk about, Andy, when you're talking about Polanyi's ideas? Is it integral focal awareness?
It's a focal subsidiary integration.
Right. There we go.
Yeah. And in fact, you know what? Let's just move over into that conversation. We lost pretty much 99% of our listeners with that last phrase, but that's okay. We'll take a moment to explain it to you. At the conference, Steve and I did a breakout session. He did his own. I did my own. And the topic that I talked on, and we wanted to just take the remaining part of this podcast just to tease out, was I spoke on the subject of science and theology. And not only that these two can work together, I made the argument that these two need one another. So it was interesting because we had a number of people. I was amazed how many people came to the session.
Yeah.
We had a standing room only going on in there. Now, I felt bad for those who came to the first session. As those of you that come to the conference, we do two back-to-back talks that are identical. Mm-hmm. However, mine weren't identical. Because the first one, I'm like, man, I'm losing a lot of people here. And then the second one, I think I made it a little bit more understandable. I mean, don't you guys find that? I mean, sometimes when you're engrossed in a subject, it can be really difficult to make it understandable to other people.
Yeah, you forget how far you've come, and all of these new terms and terminology that you're so used to, you just take it for granted after a while.
Yeah.
And
now I did use Lego, you know, trying to redeem and make this more understandable. But I think even Lego failed on the first session. Although I did get some feedback from people who really loved the first session even.
There was a lot of people wandering the hallways in the second breakout session, wanting to go into yours.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I said, well, just go stand at the back. And they came up about 2 minutes later. Nope.
No,
they're not letting me do that.
Yeah. Well, it was full and then it was incredibly hot. But let me give you just a snapshot of what I talked about. And again, the digital downloads out there. And I want to now you guys have heard me lecture on this topic before. I recently gave my first lecture on this to some master's students in an immersed class. Yeah. And you guys were in attendance. And so you guys can, talk this out with me. But what I did is I shared a guy by the name of Michael Polanyi, whom I'm doing my PhD work on. I'm using Michael Polanyi in my work in theological anthropology, and that is developing a theology of personhood. What do we mean when we talk about personhood. You know, what does it actually mean theologically to humanize, is another way to put that. Now, we're not going to get into that today because that's a different issue. Instead, what I wanted to deal with was a side issue that surrounds Polanyi and the work I've been doing, which is science and theology and how these two are working together. Because what's interesting about Polanyi is although he started out in science and in his early years was an atheist, it actually, his concern was secularism and how God was, not only God was being removed from the sciences, but persons were being removed from the sciences in this ever greater desire for, you know, this pure objective science. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Pure objective science, as in you were talking about two different levels, mm-hmm. right? And how there's the first level, which is just all the, if you will, the elementary particles.
Right, and Polanyi calls this dual control.
Dual control. So on the first level of dual control, and let me know if I'm getting this wrong, is that you have the particulars, the bits and pieces, so to speak.
The stuff the universe is made of.
Right. And these things always obey the laws of nature. They don't violate it in any way. They always follow it.
Nature doesn't disobey the right. laws of nature.
Right. And there's that. And so this is the level Polanyi is talking about. Like, this is pure science stuff.
That's right. And we would actually call that pure science. This is, you know, the hard sciences. This is where the physics and the chemistry are taking place. Now, the problem is though we live in a culture that wants to reduce all knowledge to that level as though that is the only true knowledge that's out there. Now, his critique in doing that, and this started, as you know, in the Enlightenment with the closing of the universe into what we now have, which is physicalism. By the way, physicalism is brilliantly demonstrated in a new movie out right now called Doctor Strange. So in Doctor Strange, they pit two worldviews against each other. You got Doctor Strange, who starts out as a doctor who only believes in physical, natural causes. He's a strict materialist. He thinks all that exists is just the material world. And then he starts moving east when his science only takes him so far. And of course, he embraces all sorts of Eastern mysticism. But these two worlds collide. And it's interesting how they do that. I thought it was actually really fascinating as it illustrated where we are as a culture. Now, Polanyi's critiquing that because he says, listen, as that universe closes, Nietzsche already said, listen, one of the implications to this closing of the universe is God's dying. He's dead. Right? Because you're saying all that there is a physical world. So there is no non-physical God. What Polanyi does, though, is he comes along and says, it's more than just God that's dying when you close off the universe into a purely physical universe. And you have to understand, scientists want to do that because it helps them as they're just doing this, as they're doing science. They would prefer to have a purely mechanized universe to study. It's much simpler, right, studying this purely physical mechanized universe. But in the process, he says, listen, when you do that, you're killing the scientist. You're killing the person. And if you kill the scientist, you kill the science. This is what drew Polanyi as a scientist that was cutting-edge scientist, one of the best of his time, at the highest level, at the brink of getting a Nobel Prize. And in fact, was even inducted into the Royal Society, and he abandoned science in his 50s and goes completely into philosophy for the purpose of developing a philosophy that could allow for scientists to exist to do science. This would ultimately bring him to the gates of theology.
So he believed then this the first level in his dual control, the first level, if that's all we're invested in, it destroys persons,
right,
which we need in order to even do science.
That's right, because science is this heuristic act of discovery. It is a process in which you are using things like instinct, you're using things like imagination, right? Because, I mean, that's what you do when you create theories, right? You're trying to go into the unknown. You're seeking to discover knowledge that you don't currently have. Now, this starts to break down all these paradigms of this idea that the universe is a purely mechanistic structure. I mean, if the universe were mechanized in that way, well, then doing science would be much more like doing math. But what you find is science isn't like doing math. And here you have Polanyi, a cutting-edge scientist, and he's like, and I know this because I do science and I see that it doesn't look the way you think that it does. You see, because at his time, communist countries and socialist countries were seeking to make these planning committees in which they would gather up all the scientists and just say, hey, scientists, go solve this problem. And Polanyi's like, you can't do that. Science doesn't work like that. You can't just go, go figure out what gravity is. Science just doesn't work that way.
So he's getting rid of the personhood of somebody as well, right? Consciousness and at that level.
That society is.
Society.
Yeah, with their physicalism. What he wants to do is he wants to say, no, you have to have the personhood. So he wrote a really famous book called Personal Knowledge. Towards a post-critical philosophy. And so this is what he does that's really fascinating. This gets into the theology. As he says, and I want people to think about this because I think this is critical. He would say that our culture is working with a completely backward worldview. We have a culture that starts bottom up. It starts with the physical stuff and says that the physical material world is more real than this thing called consciousness or the self or a person. And so this is why we currently have this issue in our culture where you've got a materialistic physical worldview trying to understand consciousness, and it constantly butts up against consciousness, personhood, and has no idea what to do. And so where we are currently in academia is just to deny that it even exists. Mm-hmm. So you've got the ridiculousness right now of philosophers that are writing books arguing that they don't even exist.
Yeah,
Alex Rosenberg.
Yeah, that's the name comes to mind immediately, because I remember when we were sitting in that restaurant with Frank Turek there, and I mentioned the fact that during Q&A, somebody came up, probably a student from Purdue or something like that, came up and actually challenged him on it. Like, how can you say that things don't have meaning or that you don't exist and things like that? Clearly, you wrote a book. And Alex Rosenberg, I remember, got a rather irate at that. And he basically brushed him off by saying, well, I've written a long piece about that exact question, and you can go read it, basically. Well, to which Frank Turek responded, sorry, who wrote it?
I'm sorry, who? Yeah. I mean, and that's the reality that you often find, is that people will wear two hats. They'll go into the science room and they'll put on their science hat, and in that hat they don't exist. But then when they leave the science room, right, they leave that hat there, and then they put on their father, husband, person hat, and then in that one they pretend like they do exist.
I think it was the Australian roboticist, Rodney Brooks, I think was the name, who said that exact same thing. He said, like a religious scientist, he said, I work on two different worldviews. I wear two different hats because when I go into the lab, I know free will doesn't exist and the love doesn't exist. It's just all chemical reaction. But then when I go home, I can't live like that.
Oh, I've heard many philosophers say that exact same thing. Mm. So what?
I think it's just their wife that might bring them into reality.
Yeah. Right?
Hello.
So what Polanyi does then is he flips his whole thing upside down, and he says, instead of starting bottom up in this material physical universe, we need to go top down. We need to be first and foremost committed to the fact that we are persons and we do exist, and it's the scientist who does science. It's not the science that does scientists. And so this is a complete worldview reversal. And so what you have then is you have on that dual control, you have that the first level, pure science, but you have on the second level what Polanyi would say is just applied science. This is where you have persons that are taking that stuff, the physical stuff, and is putting what he would call boundary conditions on it. You're shaping the physical world. You're taking dirt, you're making bricks by putting limitations on it.
This wide and no wider,
right? This
tall
width,
and no taller. Yep. Yep.
That's right. And then you're using those bricks to do what? Well, to build houses. And he would call that operational principles. And in doing that, what you're doing is you're creating a new thing. And so what I did at my lecture is I showed a bag of Lego and I showed a built helicopter. And I asked, you know, what's the difference between these two? Because if I, when I held up the bag of Lego pieces and I asked, you know, what is this? Nobody said, oh, that's a helicopter. Although it was the identical pieces. Mm. You know, each one of them said, well, that's a bag of Lego. And if I pushed them, they would say, it's a bag of plastic. It's a bag of plastic pieces. It's parts. But notice that they're not defining that thing by, they're defining that thing by what it's made of, because that's that first level. Now, when I showed them the helicopter and asked, what is this? All of them said, well, it's a helicopter. No one said it's Lego and no one said it's plastic. And the reality is that we define a thing by its purpose on that secondary level, because that's what persons do. We take the physical stuff and we can create things with it. Now, this is what Polanyi says is, I think, very interesting. This is worth thinking about. He would say on that level then, when you start working your way bottom up, he would say you're going from less real to more real. And the reason is he's saying that and this is the irony of it all, to open up a can of worms. This is a can of worms that Kant opened up. And that is that you've never interacted with the physical world. All that you've interacted with is your brain's interpretation of the physical world. And that is that all you are is a mind. You know, and now I'm not arguing for idealism. Don't get me wrong here. This isn't some sort of matrix thing. It's the simple reality that you have to ask yourself, how can I trust that my body and my five senses that are being run through the grid of my brain, as Kant would say, are being pre-digested by the brain and then being brought to my mind, how can I trust that I am interacting with the physical world correctly? Now, Polanyi would say this is a thing of faith. Mm-hmm. But the question becomes, well, what worldview provides a better reason to trust that mm-hmm. your five senses are working correctly? And I would argue, well, that's the Christian worldview.
Yeah. In fact, I think in a lot of ways, what Polanyi talked about is very intuitive to us.
Oh, so intuitive. Right?
Because, I mean, we start with personhood, whether you like it or not. And that's just how we operate. Like you always point out, Andy, you didn't have to teach your kids that they were people.
That's right.
Right? And that's where you start. And yet, sometimes we have to really educate ourselves into foolishness by saying we don't exist, persons don't exist, yeah. Thus destroying even the very enterprise that we cherish so much in our modern society, and like so, science.
And so there would be then a hierarchy of even personhood, because we didn't create ourselves. And so the question becomes then, well, what intentional creator person created us? And so you can naturally see how this hierarchy leads to theology. Theology and science are intermixed. You have pure and applied science.
So Polanyi started out non-Christian, in the sciences, moved into philosophy, started thinking about this stuff, and eventually became a Christian?
That's correct.
Okay.
And now, that's not to say that he didn't have his moments of doubt. And in fact, he even wrote an entire book, a chapter in his book on doubt, which influenced Timothy Keller's new book, Doubt. And in fact, Keller gives credit to Polanyi and quotes him. He did have his challenges. That's a topic for a whole nother day. Although he attended church. He was incredibly influential in a number of well-known and respected theologians. He would walk around with a copy of Anglican Book of Prayer in his pocket, for example, and would often be at universities and would defend Christianity. But again, that's not to say that he didn't have his moments of doubt and struggle.
He just sounds like a really fascinating guy. I would love to read more about him later. But that's all the time we have for today. So we'll wrap up here. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. And hey, if you want to learn more about what Andy's talking about, why not go to our website and actually order the digital download? You can go to apologeticscanada.com/store. And when the recordings are ready, you can purchase it. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.